Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or in our Facebook group and Discord channel. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes offensive. I am out of the studio tonight. I am at DK New Media talking with my friend Doug Carr, who I will introduce in just a moment. He leaned into the microphone. Say hello, Doug.
Hello, Doug.
Hi, Doug. I have a work holiday party this Thursday night, so we're recording ahead. So you're going to hear me talk to Doug about Facebook and Twitter and those platforms and where they're headed for independent content creators. And after that, you will hear Kara Schultz. She is the candidate recruiter for the National Libertarian Party. And she joined me for about 40 minutes to talk about the challenges and she's actually a twice elected libertarian candidate in her city council. And so she's run for office and she's recruiting 2,000 candidates for the National Libertarian Party. So after we get done talking about social media, then please tune into that. And if you don't want to hear us opine about that, then you can forward ahead. But I don't think you should, because I've got my good friend Doug Carr, who you heard a couple weeks ago as we talked about, you heard he was in the Navy. I'm sure, even though we are recording this directly after that podcast, time shifting, I've heard many comments about your comments, Doug, because you're fine.
Am I making waves?
But that's what we want.
That's what I like doing.
Yes, yeah. We want people commenting. So I mentioned something a couple weeks ago on the show. I've got this theory, and Doug is one of the top digital marketers in the entire country, somebody that I've looked up to and respected for a long time here in the city of Indianapolis, somebody that's been a mentor to me in various ways in 2017. You've given me the confidence to really like push ahead with We Are Libertarians and really put myself out there as a podcaster and businessman, which I thank you so much for.
That's the ultimate compliment. I can't tell you how much that means. Thank you.
When we met in April, and I had talked to a friend, a former host on the show, Lynn Swayze, and she said, you know, you could be making like good money doing what you do because you're really good at it. And I believed her, but it's like your friend, so you don't know that. But then when you meet somebody that you've followed for a long time that you know is well respected in the industry and said, no, you're really good at this and you know what you're talking about. And like, if you were to ever lose your job, you could immediately start making a lot of money doing this thing. And I went,
or enough, at least.
Enough, right? Right, yeah. Well, I'm live simply, okay? Yeah. It's just me and the two cats.
I've seen them.
Yeah,
on Facebook.
They're very cute. Look at my phone. Look how cute Muffins is. You know, it's you've been an encourager for me to really kind of push forward and put myself out there as an expert on podcasting, because I've done it for almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
And I've built this thing that is reaching tens of thousands of people, bringing in, you know, a nice little second income for me. You know, it's mostly going right back into the business, but
sure.
You know, when you need a tank of gas, it's nice to have that extra money there. So I can't thank you enough for that. And I just think that you're an important voice here in Indianapolis, and so I have this theory about social media.
Yep.
I hate it. And I think that we've kind of gotten to this point because I'm numbered 19 million on Facebook. Like, there's 2 billion people on the platform. I'm number 19 million. As soon as it came to my college in 2004 or 5, I jumped on it. I got on Facebook. I've been an early adopter of every social media platform up until Peach. I didn't do Peach.
Yeah.
I have loved social media from the beginning. It is responsible for my career. For those of you who don't know, I started working at a small AM radio station in 2004. I learned to market that station with zero budget on social media and help turn Abdul into Abdul here in town because I was doing social media marketing. I then went on to the Libertarian Party and took hundreds of candidates and organizations and used that to help build the political party, you know, into a well-respected third party here in Indiana. I mean, they already were, but I helped. Then I went on to that skill of using social media and interacting with people and building an audience was the encouragement to start We Are Libertarians in 2012, March of 2012. And to say, I no longer need to be hired by a radio station to be a political commentator and radio broadcaster. I can start my own thing,
yeah,
and I can build an audience around that. And I've now built an audience of tens of thousands of people. We have thousands of people listening a week. We have tens of thousands of people following online, listening to what we, the gang at We Are Libertarians, what I have to say. So, you know, and now my day job is marketing a nationally syndicated radio show to people online on social media. And I've seen over the course of that, the last 5 years especially, if we wanted to get traffic to the website, you had to use social media. And referral traffic is still mostly Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook is incredibly powerful for people, and it became really powerful the last 5 years. And that is where, and I've noticed over the last 5 years that marketing dollars are going from radio stations and TV ads and doing a bunch of things to put it on Facebook. In fact, I've been involved with basically a TV commercial shoot that was done very low budget, but looks super professional, that is being targeted through Facebook to specific zip codes.
Yeah.
Like, it's an incredibly powerful marketing tool for small businesses, for independent publishers like myself. But I'm concerned because in that time, Facebook specifically, Twitter's garbage. Like, I don't know if you agree, but I think Twitter's a garbage platform that I don't think anybody really uses. Influencers do really well on it, but everybody else, it's garbage. It's like a news feed. Facebook is where I see most people having interactions, and to a lesser extent, Instagram and Snapchat.
Yeah, I mean, I still love Twitter, but your point is well taken. I mean, Twitter is basically a newsfeed.
You know, right.
It's the public bulletin board, and I like it. You know, I use it for discovery. You know,
yeah.
But if I'm going to have a conversation with someone, it's typically on Facebook.
So, I over the last year have Trump fatigue, and I think a lot of other people do too. And I think there's going to be a convergence of events that change these platforms, because there's no longer the Wild West. We've now settled on Facebook, Google, Apple, and Amazon being the big four as major tech companies that are really going to do, you know, some may rise or fall, but for right now, those are the big four. You know, it's not like it was 10 years ago where you had a MySpace fallout and a Facebook rise and a Friendster and, you know, all these other companies. And so everybody's putting their eggs into these baskets, into the Facebook basket, especially for people's attention. Facebook started testing something where they are taking pages and putting them on a separate tab,
yeah,
groups on a separate tab. So what you're going to get is you're going to get a Facebook feed that resembles your Instagram feed, people that you love and respect. And I have a separate Facebook account that's very small with 120 people,
yeah,
that's friends and family, the people that I talk to on a regular basis, and I want to see their stuff, right? And I love that feed much more than the one that's been around for 15 years that likes 10,000 pages, that has 8,000 connections. Like, that's like a fire hose of trash for,
yeah,
the most part. And so I think Facebook is going to try, because they're being forced by Congress with the Russian stuff and just by users tuning out, to change the algorithm, to change the way that things are set up, to move independent creators off of the platform. They'll eventually sign partnerships with major publications like the Washington Post, the New York Times, like they did with their instant articles and Google did with AMP. And the little guy, like, I got in at the right time to start a news outlet, right? I got in at the right time. And anybody who wants to start a media company, you're kind of a little bit hosed at this point because it's going to be hard to get organic growth like yeah. I got. Like I had organic growth at a time where you could get organic growth for free.
Yeah, it's always nice to hit that upshot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly right. But for people coming after, you're gonna have to pay for it. But then now, even if you pay for it, you're not gonna be in front of people. Exactly. You're gonna be in front of 5% instead of 2% of that feat. So is my theory correct that moving forward, it's going to be hard for independent publishers? They're going to really start to squash independent publishers. For instance, we are libertarians. If I upload a video, monetization is turned off automatically. If I want monetization turned on, I have to get 1,000 views on a video. We never get 1,000 views. Google and YouTube have already decided that everything that comes out of my mouth is not monetizable. And so it's not a platform where I can even, you can't have the next PewDiePie. You can't you can't have the next Joe Rogan because the platforms have already decided we're going to go with a liberal bent and we need to patrol free speech and the government is going to force us to do it if we don't start doing it. Which is before I throw it to Doug to analyze my analysis, that is why it's really important for you to go to wearelibertarians.com and subscribe to our email list. Oh. I've never been a believer in email lists, but holy hell am I now. Yeah. So do you think that my theory of the days of organic growth and controlled thought on these platforms are upon us, or am I overreacting?
Well, I'll start out with some bad news and then we'll get to get the good news. You never built an audience on Facebook. You just built Facebook's audience and were able to reach them. And this has been the danger since day one. And honestly, from a business perspective, one that we always pushed our clients that no matter how enticing it was to spend all your time on Facebook, keep bringing them back to your site. What you just said was the money shot. You said, come back and subscribe to, you know, We Are Libertarians. And that's, so whenever we're pushing our clients for any messaging, anything that we publish online, we're always pushing them, go back and subscribe. Because when we have direct contact with our audience through a subscription or a phone number, that's our audience. That's not Facebook's audience. You know, between now and then, you're just renting Facebook's audience.
Right.
That's what you're doing. And so people, you know, for people out there, I screamed when it happened. I thought it was, I honestly think if
when what happened?
Well, what happened was when Facebook launched Pages, they enticed every business first to get up a page and then to start building their audience and to start, you know, building community around the audience. And we all spent a lot of money and time on that.
Yeah.
A lot of money and time.
They penalized you if you didn't switch.
Yeah, well, I mean, so they took off. You know, we started to get that exposure and we loved it and everything else. But then they turned us off, you know, and they basically said, oh, well, you know, if you want to reach your audience now you got to start paying us. I'm not sure anywhere else in commerce that, you know, doing something like that, it would be like someone selling you a plot of land, you know, down the street and then, tearing up the street after they sold you the the building.
Yeah. It really is like you can now only reach realistically 5% of your likes.
Yeah. And that was the day that it hit me. I was like, never again, even with my own stuff. I'm all over Facebook and all over Twitter. But I am always pushing people back to my site.
And caveat, I know they're a private company. They can do whatever they decide, but we can also decide to stop using the product if we feel they're being dishonest with us.
Yeah. And there's a great libertarian argument here. In fact, my son and I were talking about it the other night and, you know, that, you know, you have free speech, but if AT&T shut off your phone lines, do you have free speech?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, there's a real weird question here, you know, that if Facebook is the 99% medium, you know, from a social media standpoint, and then Facebook cuts off your voice, you know, do you have free speech?
Amazon Web Services powers 48% of the back end of the internet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Google is showing you
yeah.
2% of the internet, but that's 98% of where you're spending your time. I mean, these four companies really, I mean, at what point do you feel like they're at a public utility point yet?
Public utility is a tough one, but I can say, like, I think it's Prager University right now that's suing YouTube, I think.
Oh, they may be.
Yeah. Well, basically what happened was a bunch of Prager University YouTube videos got marked as far as being, you know, inciting or something like that. And so they weren't allowed to have ad money anymore. Well, ad money was a primary revenue, you know,
right.
for them to continue making videos. I think Prager's actually got a pretty strong case. I'm not an attorney, but, you know, Prager basically showed them, okay, well, here's all the other videos that are monetized that oppose our,
yeah.
you know, so equal and opposite. And Prager's point is that, look, there is truly only one video, you know, hosting social media site.
Yeah.
I mean, Vimeo doesn't even come close, and Wix is a paid site and everything else. And when you have that, you know, kind of monopoly, I think there is an argument there that constitutionally you can really silence people, and you're in a position of power. And so I think, you know, the Spider-Man, you know, with great power comes, you know.
Yeah, but, it's 21 videos for Prager University titled, "Are the Police Racist? Why Don't Feminists Fight for Muslim Women? Who is More Pro-Choice, Europe or America?" Google has since doubled down on its decision to make PragerU's videos inaccessible by many of its videos. And then they started the alerts thing, which, like, PewDiePie was all over at the beginning, where, you know, the subscription tab doesn't really matter anymore. You have to now go and click alerts, and, you know, trying to drive an audience, a mass audience, to go and do something
right.
takes years and a ton of promotion. And the whole notion of algorithms,
right.
I mean, really is them controlling some of this stuff.
Yeah, and that's the key issue. You know, it's the equivalent of someone stopping you from talking.
Right.
That's I mean, you know, it's a, you know, sure, there's the nuances there to argue about because they're a private company, but a private company can't, you know, put their hand over your mouth and tell you to stop talking mm-hmm. outside. And so I think there's a real argument to be had. At the same time, I'm a capitalist, you know, and I look at these and I go, yes, keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. Because I honestly feel, you know, you said that, you know, we're down to, you know, these main ones, but, you know, crap, I thought MySpace was going to be it. I thought, you know, I
right.
thought Twitter was going to be it. I thought, you know, and so I really do think there's evolving systems right now that are really taking off. You know, we have, you know, natural language processing is taking off where we might be able to speak and have something read back and everything else. I do think there's opportunities in innovation that something better will come along.
Yeah.
And Facebook is buying everybody right now that seems like a threat.
Or,
you know,
fucking them over like they did Snapchat.
Yeah.
Snapchat wouldn't sell, so they just took their idea and put it on their three apps.
Absolutely, and destroyed them. But to me, the political one is one that's really dangerous for them, and that's that they don't – I'm going to come off sound like such an asshole here, but they need to understand who has the money.
Right.
You know, and – typically, you know, very, very, very wealthy liberals, you know, there's that echelon of, you know, upper class liberals. But for the most part, the majority of liberals aren't, you know, multi-billionaires,
right.
you know. And when you get to the conservative side, you're getting to middle of America, big numbers, you know, obviously half the country, you know, but a lot of sway, you know, from a money standpoint. And whenever you do that, whenever you piss off a, you know, look at, you know, Sean Hannity didn't even, you know, it didn't even really happen. And, you know, was it coffee makers?
Keurig. So Keurig was a sponsor. And so Hannity had on more and basically gave, it wasn't even a softball interview by Hannity standards. And then all the, like,
Here's well, somebody, like, it was Media Matters.
It's complained. Media Matters, and they have all these no-buy lists. Like, what, yeah. what you have to understand is that if, and we went through this, like, when Rush Limbaugh said the Sandra Fluke thing and called her a slut, anybody associated with Premier Radio got on a no-buy list. Right. And there are entire sites dedicated to letting everyone know at these ad agencies in Chicago, New York, and LA, surprise, liberal havens in San Francisco, like these, the ad agencies in those towns go and check those websites and they go, okay, well, we're not buying this. We're not buying this. This is why you see Fox News with higher ratings, you know, having shower
catheters
mats,
and
catheters yeah. as opposed to Chrysler on MSNBC. Because you have these no buy lists, and so even a show that is innocuous, like a Ryan Seacrest, who's syndicated by Premiere, these ad agencies just started to refuse to buy Ryan Seacrest because he was syndicated by the same people as Rush Limbaugh.
But see, I look at that as an awesome thing.
Right, because, but only the left does it. And so when the right is now starting to put it together and get it together because they're just start like there's the Daily Coast always kind of existed. There was always this trashy left leftists, as Ben Shapiro calls them leftists. The Antifa are leftists and the left are people like the New Republic, the Nation magazine, David Corn, whatever, Mother Jones. And so now you have the right, the Weekly Standards, the National Reviews, and then the trashy alt-right where they're now organizing and, you know, whatever they're for, we're against. Yeah. And, you know, you see it with the Roy Moore stuff.
Sure.
And so in radio, you just had a crippling of all of these local stations where, like, Rush Limbaugh was taken off here from, you know, a 50,000-watt radio station and put onto an AM station. Because they just couldn't sell to local advertisers anymore because the databases that Media Matters keeps included local advertisers here in every one of his 600 affiliates. And so, you know, it's partly capitalism, but it sucks. It's silencing free speech. And I hate to see the right start to get into that game.
I do too.
You know, and it's like this, and it's like when Hannity gives an interview to Roy Moore, just because he gave an interview to Roy Moore, like, it's in the public's interest for us to hear what Roy Moore has to say.
Yeah.
Like, it's in the public's interest for there to be balance to what he has to say. And so for Keurig and all these other sponsors to pull their ads, and when they did, the right started, you know, hitting Keurig machines with golf balls. And, you know, and then it gets conflated into the internet, and even I did it because it was a funny tweet, like, you know, where, you know, 1776... white men pour tea into the harbor for freedom. 2017, white men smash coffee makers for child molesters. Like, it was a funny tweet, but it is a very like the internet simplifies everything down so much. Well, so
we talked on the last one that the word that keeps coming back to me, and I wrote about it about a week ago on MarTech on my site, was stampede.
You know,
and that's that we have these stampedes of running, screaming people that they don't look at context. They don't investigate. They don't take a deeper dive, but they just join the herd and keep stampeding. And the herd gets huge, you know. And then people are trampled under it. But my point with that though is that the plus side of it to me, and this is just me being honest, is that it always comes back to bite them in the ass, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Kroger, the what. Why do I keep saying Kroger?
Keurig.
Keurig, you know, the thing with Keurig that was interesting was they actually didn't even have a policy internal on what media to buy and not buy, and it was kind of a mistake. Mm. And so Sean Hannity, I think, gave away for like 500 machines on his show the other day or something. But again, Keurig immediately noticed, holy shit,
yeah,
we are in trouble. I mean, you think about, you know, I don't know what Sean Hannity's reach is, you know, but let's say it was a million people that got rid of their Keurigs.
Hannity's radio reach is probably 2 to 4 million people.
Yeah.
But let's say 1% of that.
Yeah. And you figure Keurig has every coffee pod you put in is licensed by Keurig, mm-hmm. whether it's a third party or not. I mean, that's a shitload of money to just take an instant hit on.
in one quarter.
And yeah, yeah. And so, and you got to explain that to your stockholders.
Pre-Christmas.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And now I did notice, I forget the other coffee maker company, but they have been rolling out the ads. And I was like, good for them. Yeah. You know, hell yeah, take some market share on this. But to get back to my point, like I keep going. Like pain is when things change, you know? And so what Facebook has done to this point hasn't been that painful, but it's going to get there. You know, when people see that it's totally filtered, that they're being fed, you know, just whatever propaganda that Facebook's people approve, you know, and Google's doing the same thing, that's when competitors have a unique opportunity to snag some market share if they're intelligent. Like, you know, I'm not a Microsoft guy, I'm a Mac guy, but I would love to see Bing just all of a sudden, if Google, something really bad happened with Google, and Bing caught 20% of market share, it would be fantastic, because it would cause an avalanche of other things to happen. Yeah. You know, ad rates would drop, and you know, and all of a sudden, you know, your ability to reach more people with less money would increase, which would increase your marketing results, which would increase your business results, which could grow your businesses, you know, faster. And so I'm one of these guys that I can't stand this ridiculous bubble that these tech companies are in. You know, most of them are sitting in San Francisco, which has the hugest, you know, disparity of poverty and wealth, has the hugest amount of homeless people, the most ridiculous housing rates that nobody can afford. And they want us to think that they're the people that, you know, understand how the country should be run. And it's these, you know, white guilt tech leaders,
yeah, you know,
that live in their mansions, that are starting to apply this pressure on their own people to, you know, to think a specific way. But, it's starting to crumble. The guy that got, fired from Google,
James Darrimore.
I'm so glad you were the perfect co-host.
Listen, what you have to understand,
I called you a co-host. Did you like that?
You're
like the perfect host because you know all of the facts.
I need a new offensive co-host. Yeah. So I literally just don't have a life. So yeah. I just read all this stuff all the time. And like I do, I've started posting all of my reading material, watch the videos I watch, all of the show prep that I do at wearelibertarians.com. So it's become almost my own personal, my own personal Tumblr. And I don't know if you're familiar with a guy named Michael Hyatt. He built this, get noticed theme that allows me to post things, these mini posts, in a very easy way.
Nice.
And so I'm able to really pump my content out there independently.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm going to turn on comments there because I want to have a community there.
As make people subscribe to log in.
Yeah, good point. So
but going back,
I
read a fascinating article the other day that Google has been doing a number of forums internal with employees, and this is far from over. Like there is absolute fear internally, and the problem is that some of the engineers that are in there that are still continuing to say this is really messed up are saying that productivity is slowing down at Google. And so it's not just having a debilitating effect from a cultural standpoint, it's really having an impact on their overall productivity. I mean, the fact is that there's smart people on the left and there's smart people on the right. If you throw out half the smart people, you're losing half your smart people.
Yeah. And like what, and I, just know? To recap, like James Darrimore wrote this internal memo at Google basically saying like the culture of diversity sucks here. Like you're just trying to do, encourage, like it really got into hot water with women in tech.
Yeah.
And his point was that men are inherently more analytical than women, and women are more inherently caretakers. And that's why you see, it's like the wage gap argument. You know, the reason there's a 70% difference in pay, or the, you know, that women get 70% of what men get, is that women drop out of the workforce more often to raise kids. They're in lower paying jobs like social work or teachers.
But you know, in tech, nursing. They're paid more, right?
Are they?
Yes.
No, I don't know that. Yeah. Yeah, and so
yeah, I mean, you slice the data the way that you want to feed your bias.
Right. And so it's not that, I'm sure there are absolutely examples where women, like women in the workplace, are consistently talked over.
Yeah.
They're not listened to. Their ideas are not validated until a man says they're that right. way. I mean, we both have worked in professional environments where we know that to be true.
Absolutely.
Like the sexual harassment, lynching stuff, like there really is a very, like, pendulum swinging back saying, you know what, it's like, you're going to respect us or we're going to, like, it. What these guys are doing is wrong. Like, Al Franken shouldn't be feeling up women.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey's different. Like, Harvey Weinstein's probably the best example. You should not use your power to lord over.
Manipulate.
Yeah. Like, other people are not your property.
Right.
So I understand it, but what James Darrenmore said was basically like, we don't necessarily have a problem. You're trying to create solutions for a problem that may not exist in the first place.
Well, I always tell people that the interesting thing on that whole argument is that differences, this is the quote that I can't remember where I read it, but it always comes back to mind, is that differences aren't deficits. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really fascinating thing that women do. That are not all women, but women that are really climbing on board, you know, the gender, you know, the women are treated unfairly train, is they're doing it by comparing themselves to men. And I find that so ironic that, okay, you're saying that you're not successful by comparing yourself to a man. Like, isn't that inherently, a 360 argument that doesn't work?
Yeah. Especially when women right now graduate college more often than men. They live longer.
I mean, 98% of deaths in the workplace are men, you know, right. I mean,
that's the other part for the wage gap. Yeah.
But the thing there that I think is just weird is that it's comparing apples and oranges, you know, that you can't compare your success to a man to say that you're successful. You can be successful as a woman and just be successful.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be compared to a man. And so differences, I love the differences aren't deficits. The fact that a woman is, you know, over millions of years has become a better caretaker to him than a man on average, you know, is not a deficit.
Sure.
That should be used as an advantage. And any good business person, I mean, the stats are there as well that, you know, women-owned businesses actually profit better than men, especially on startups and stuff like that, because they don't go make these bulldog decisions and force everybody to kind of run their direction. They are more collaborative and everything. And so the fascinating thing is that, you know, if you're a good business person, the last thing that you want is a room full of men running your company anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a terrifying.
Diversity is inherently good, but not at the cost of, like, there's a great book that I just read called Manning Up by Kay Heimowitz. And she basically argues that the 90s girl power movement, where all these brands and schools and institutions and government and Title IX and all these things, as they tried to level the playing field for women, what it did is it put men into delayed adolescence.
Yeah.
And that's why you have so many guys who, she's taken heat, as I have taken heat, you know. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with video games, but I do think that it's everything is balanced, where I've jokingly said, like, that slacker dude that just, like, hangs out and he goes to work and he's a bartender and he comes home and he plays video games and he watches football, he goes to sleep, he goes to work, football, video games, sleep. Like, that's not an existence where you're actually doing anything for the world. You're not actually adding anything to the world. Like, you're not contributing to society.
Right.
And there's way too many of those guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going out tomorrow night with a girl who said, like, that's all that's out there. And I've been ghosted 3 times. Like, this is an attractive, intelligent, 24-year-old single mom who has, like, a lot of things really going well. Like, she's a catch.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, guys out there are just, like, cowards. Like, not all guys, okay, I'm not saying all, don't use your flat thinking on me, like, but there's a certain percentage, and I think those of us, like, it, man, if you heard George on that podcast, like, that's a man. Like, there's like that's a guy that just goes out there and takes life by
you're talking
edibles.
About a 49-year-old single guy that's just has a rock star. Well, we're heart. But
we're messes. We're not like George is a man. We're messes.
The thing is you know, there's a side of me, and this will piss the women off, you know, that you know, if you wanted a great guy with a great business that his kids are gone and left, and you just want to grow old together with him, and he'll kill for you. He's a great caretaker, awesome beard. That's Doug Carr, right?
Right.
You know, but the fact is that, you know, I got a keg, not a six pack, you know, so I'm, you know, I'm fat and I work a lot of hours and everything else. And so, the dick at the gym that's looking at himself in the mirror, you know, every 5 seconds, you know, you're going to go home and cry and ask yourself, like, why is every guy an asshole? While there's guys like me, you know, sitting out there that would, and that's, I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I'm more saying, you know, hey, if you keep going out with dickheads, maybe it's not the dickheads that are the problems.
Sure. Yeah. So
where did we go with this?
I'm bringing.
Are we
it
in
back
a rabbit now. Trail?
We are so far down the rabbit hole. You and I are ADD as hell, and it's not good. But no, like, circling back, like, Elaine Powell, Condé Nast felt that Reddit needed to be censored because they were having some problem with revenge porn. And so they brought in the CEO, Elaine Powell, and Elaine Powell, you know, prides herself on, she's running for Congress right now. She just wrote a book. Like, she brought in a lot of quote unquote diversity, very liberal, very feminist.
Yeah.
And fundamentally didn't understand the audience of her platform. No. And she is as responsible as anyone for the alt-right.
Yeah.
Because what she did is she took a platform of dudes hanging out, talking to each other, told them, well, you're not welcome here. They went to 4chan, they created Pepe, and then they shitposted Donald Trump into the White House.
Right.
And so this false notion of we need to create diversity on these platforms because they live in their own little tech bubble and they've kind of created their own misery because their Facebook feeds and their Twitter feeds are now algorithmed to only show them what they like. Like, they have unknowingly unleashed the very thing that they hate. And it's really kind of an interesting thing to watch.
You know, if you don't want to see the monsters that are hiding in dark spots, don't shine a light at them.
Yeah.
You know, like, because we were talking in, you know, on a previous podcast that I think people are inherently good. But every person has a measure of darkness to them, you know, and it's scale, you know, but we don't ever want to scale when we look at someone, you know, we don't want to say Al Franken's a 90% probably a good guy that cares about the people around him or whatever. You know, we just want to say, no, he's either an asshole or he's, you know, a god.
Editor's note, we only know of one woman. So, like, in the future, if, like, 75 women have come out and he's the new Cosby, just know that we recorded the day those allegations came out.
I think the first time I saw it was on the opposite end. It was with, you know, with President Obama. Uh-huh. You know, I saw all these people just worshiping this guy, and I'm standing there going, he's a guy.
Right.
Like, he's a dude. You know, he went to kind of had a pretty awesome life, you know, got to travel the world and went to Ivy Leagues, went to prep schools and Ivy League. And I'm like, damn, that nice thing.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I started to see, you know, and I could wax poetic about this too, but where people started worshiping people, you know, mm-hmm. and at the same time started hating people. Like,
yeah.
Heaven and earth all of a sudden found its way into, you know, social media, and that there was either people that were demons and devils and they deserve to literally die. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean, you read some of the comments online and it's pretty horrifying. You get about 10 comments down and someone will be calling for a death, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad they got shot, and I'm glad, like, holy shit.
You
man.
Realize you really do see when you look at the fire hose of humanity, like the people that,
yeah,
were hanging out watching a hanging,
yeah,
in 1850, or,
yeah, exactly,
you know, we're you know, like, there's a story of the Mongolians during the 1200s that this town wouldn't submit to them. So when they finally submitted, what they did is they dug a pit. They made these people dig a pit. They put the townspeople in it. They put planks of wood over it and then, like, made it so they were incapacitated, basically. And then all the Mongolians, the hordes, walked up and sat down on the planks and had dinner as people were dying underneath them.
Yeah.
Like, just enjoying themselves, fun, frivolity. Like, that's, that to me is a level of human depravity and lack of respect for human life that's hard for us as individuals to comprehend, but that's in every one of us.
It is. And when you get to online, like, I'll give another one, you know, that I think was, it was either Facebook or somebody was saying that the government had to get involved because of the amount of terrorist communication online, you know, that basically that they were able to get these messages out. And if not through the web, you know, that somehow terrorism would disappear, I guess.
Right.
But the thing that I look at it and I go, you know, the Constitution was pretty clear about not inhibiting people and making it a lot tougher to find people guilty, you know, than the opposite. And they knew, the, you know, the founding fathers even said, yeah, it's going to be at the expense of the death of people, you know, that guilty people will go free and everything. And I always look at those things and I just go, when you manipulate them, you're touching an experiment and not getting a true result. Like, if you're hiding all of the terrorist activity, how do you find the terrorists and how do you track them down? If you hide all the racists from online, how do you know when people are racist?
Well, yeah, it's like when we put white, when we talk about white culture on We Are Libertarian, they just see libertarian white. They don't listen to the content.
Right.
They just lump us in with Richard Spencer because we just must be Richard Spencer if we're libertarian, moderately right. Like, there's nobody at YouTube that's actually listening to anything that we're saying.
Right. There's no, again, we talked about context and intent. You know, those things are lost. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of leaving things alone, you know, and letting them self-destruct. And so to go back to all the way, you know, back to the beginning to take a Facebook, every time Facebook does this, I kind of cheer a little bit inside. And it's that, you know, that keep going, keep going, guys. They're trying to push it and they're going to push it as far as they possibly can. But the problem is that a lot of times you just can't come back from that. You know, you can't, you once you go over the edge and the audience leaves and the money leaves, trying to get it back is impossible nowadays. Yeah. That's the lesson of, the stampede is, you know, once Facebook gets on everybody's bad side, there's no coming back from
that. Stop wasting your money on advertising. If you listen to this show and you love this show and you have a business that would appeal to libertarians, stop wasting your money on Facebook ads.
Yeah.
Spend it with me. I say that self-servingly, but like, you're going to get a direct partner with an engaged audience, and you're not going to get censored.
Well, there's a real, and that's, you know, within the industry, that's influencer marketing, right?
Yeah.
And influencer marketing is advocacy and influencer marketing get better results than any other type of advertising. It's just that they're difficult, right?
Right.
That's Facebook ads is just easy. I get to select, put in a budget and go.
Right.
Well, to go find every crisp angle that, you know, with, you know, to get to 5 million people, you know, that's tough, you know, and then writing checks to each one of them. But the problem that people are missing is that the return on investment is much greater because you're going to care whether they're getting results or not, because your livelihood depends on it.
Yeah.
Facebook doesn't care whether you got results or didn't get results. In fact, there's this great thing. People should look it up, honestly. If you're doing Facebook ads and you go to the demographic selections and there's a thing called, I forget, it's called audience addition or audience extension, or I don't think I'm wording it right, but it's audience something. And it's clicked automatically. Now, this isn't a hidden... You literally have to enter, you know, the demographic, you know, and behavioral data to find this checkbox, but it's hidden. And so once you uncover all the demographic and behavioral options on Facebook ads, you'll see way down at the bottom, there's like audience extension or or something like that. I can't remember the name. But anyways, what that is Facebook sells your ad to third parties when mm-hmm. they don't have enough places to cover it. And what advertisers find over and over and over again is that when they uncheck that button, they get much higher click-through rates.
Are you talking about the audience? There's Facebook. You can advertise on Facebook. You can advertise on Instagram. And then they have their advertising network, their display network.
It's basically Facebook. No, it's not a selection. It's literally Facebook has an audience. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, like boosting your, if you hit that boost post, for instance, that's a waste of your money. What you need to do is wait 3 days and then go back and boost it in the back end of the business manager, because what they're doing is they're just trying to get your money by having you hit boost post.
Well, that's what this is. I mean, basically it's a network of advertisers that they can sell your ads to mm-hmm. when they don't have enough space to sell it. And the problem is that it doesn't have the targeting and the communication and the buy-in that Facebook people have. And so what advertisers find is whenever they have that box checked, they lose half their money. Well, guess what? Did Facebook care? No, they have it defaulted on. They literally have it defaulted on.
I'm having a problem right now. My good friend Rupert Bonham, Rupert from Survivor.
Facebook Audience Network.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's you know, and they advertise it. Introducing Facebook's Audience Network. Today, we're announcing an expanded test of Facebook's Audience Network, a new way for advertisers to extend their campaigns beyond Facebook and into other mobile apps. The power of Facebook ads off Facebook.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's,
you know, a guy like me wrote that copy.
So Rupert got locked out of his Twitter and, actually, I'm pretty sure it was somebody who was associated with the show that did it with malintent. Mm. And so Rupert can't get into his Twitter account. And, you know, it's essential to help promote his charity.
Yeah.
But, like, we've spent 3 days trying to find somebody at Twitter to get a hold of. There's no way. Right. You don't know how to get a hold of anybody. Like, so do you think that the future of advertising really is that small mom and pop? We're going to, in so many ways, the media, the advertiser, the marketing dollars, the news gathering, it's all heading back towards that more mom and pop.
I mean, what we work with a lot with our clients is still on organic, you know, that when we develop, you know, really premium content for people, including like podcasts, we tend to get highly relevant, engaged people with intent. You know, the fact is that I don't care what, if you're selling cars in town, people aren't going to Facebook to buy a car.
Right.
They're just not. But they're going to Google, you know, to search mm-hmm. for, to buy a car. And so, you know, Facebook is often, you know, we promote content on Facebook to drive people back to the site where then we can convert them,
right,
you know, into a subscriber or to purchase, make a purchase. But the purchase intent isn't really on Facebook most of the time. And so it's, and people are finding that. I mean, within the industry, I think the funny part, it's maybe not that funny, is, you know, I have a lot of my friends that were social media managers a couple of years ago that are now out of a job, you know, and a lot of companies have said, you know what, no, I'm going to take my social media team and I'm going to put them back into my customer experience team and work on retention and work on, I'd much rather have this person working on customer happiness, which I know has a great return on investment, than tweeting and throwing out Facebook updates that 5% of
that nobody cares.
That, like, nobody sees.
If you're Tide. Yeah. Like, I couldn't imagine being like the social media person for Tide.
Right, because, like, the expectations are greater, 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 greater.
And what's, you know, what do I care about Tide, what Tide says? Yeah. But Facebook is happy to take their money to absolutely say nonsense. That's where, like, a Wendy's stands out, where you have just this one smart, snarky person, you know, fighting with everybody in a fun way.
But that's the power of premier content. Like, that's the power, is that you have to truly be exceptional.
Yeah.
And so that's hard. And so people go, that doesn't work. I'm just going to buy ads. HubSpot announced at a event recently that, you know, they didn't say they were throwing in the towel, but they said inbound is basically not going to happen unless you have unless you're buying ads or paying for, you know, Facebook, you know, or whatever.
Right, because Facebook turned it off.
Well, guess what? It's because HubSpot's content wasn't that good. As a marketer, I do not go read a 25-year-old account manager's article on HubSpot to get inspiration for my, you know, I don't, you know. And I look, HubSpot's a good company and they're making a lot of changes and everything else. But the fact is that they were the Walmart of content.
Right.
You know, they were just pumping out so much crap. And you go to an article there right now, and I guarantee it's really lightweight. And there's like, ugh, you know. Whereas you go to, you know, some expert's article, go to a Mark Schaefer or Dennis Yu is a good guy for Facebook, you know. Dennis writes these really verbose, long-winded, you know, screenshots showing every aspect of the testing that he's done and everything else. And guess what? Dennis Yu does pretty good selling workshops.
Why you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's the thing is we went through this phase of, well, everybody's got to do content. So 3 blog posts a week and it was all crap. It's like radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who won on radio? The people with the best content won.
Right. Like the idea of PR Newswire is a great idea. Yeah. Put your press release out there, but now it's just an SEO farm.
It's,
I mean,
it's not even that.
Yeah. So how does a Dennis Yu or how does a Dennis Yu get discovered? How does a Chris Spangle or a Doug Carr or the next political commentator or industry expert get discovered in a post-social media world?
Well, I mean, I'll give a great book for that is Mark Schaefer wrote Known, K-N-O-W-N, and he basically has kind of a play-by-play of, you know, how do you get there? The thing is it doesn't, you know, I don't know that I got, I was early on board definitely, you know, and so I got a good Twitter following and a good Facebook following. But I really think that my following ramped up mostly from writing great articles. And then I got known locally before I got known nationally. Mm. You know, I went and spoke at events. Like I was arguing with a guy, a young guy, you know, that says that he doesn't get invited to speak anywhere, you know? And I was like, invited? Like, holy crap. I was like, I could look up 20 events in town in the next week and they would be begging for anybody to show up and speak to them, you know, like I'm serious. Like, you know, any club, any, you know, I spoke at the National Speakers Association. I'm not part of the National Speakers Association.
They're just that desperate. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. But people really want a different, you know, and I kept doing that and doing that and doing that. And until I got good. Right. I mean, I was not good. I was a terrible public speaker when I first started, and I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And I guess I just was pigheaded by that age where I wasn't going to let anybody tell me I couldn't, you know, and I just kept going and going and going. And you have to differentiate yourself. And I mean, your history is so unique that I don't think there's a twin to Chris Spangle, you know, in this universe. And so, and that's always the tough one is what's unique about, you know, what is unique about you that other people don't have. You know, you talked about the audience you built, but you went beyond that. Audiences aren't that hard to build. That's just people listening and, you know, stuff like that. But the hardest part is building a community of people that actually interact with you. I'd say that you know, I have a huge audience. I don't know that it's, let's say it's equal to yours, but my community is terrible. I do not have interaction with the people that I've attracted at all. And so I'm in awe of your talent there, that you really get people engaged and talking with each other and going to, you know, events and everything else. I just don't have that. And so I'm a student, you know, when it comes to that. But none of this has ever stopped me.
Yeah.
You know, I think people tend to want to ask permission or to get recognized, and they shouldn't. They shouldn't wait. You know, I tell people just plant your flag. I got in an argument a long time ago with people that it was over the term expert, and it was when Malcolm Gladwell came came out with this book and said an expert has spent 10,000 hours. And I was like, that's such horse shit. You know, and everybody was like, well, anybody that calls himself an expert is an idiot. And I said, you know what? Are you looking for an expert? Can I help you? If I can help you, yeah, I'm an expert.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, you taught me that. Like what? Can you get paid to teach people how to podcast?
Yeah.
Then you're an expert in podcasting. Like, I was like, I am?
Yeah.
You're like, hey, dumbass.
But people naturally want to be recognized before they know. Go plant the flag and maybe you die and you just get slaughtered out there. But the fact is that it's the people that are audacious enough to put themselves in front of the crowd and to go say they can do something are the ones that, you know, that get the opportunity. And what was it? Scott McCorkle at ExactTarget when, you know, this is right about when I left ExactTarget, but he was telling me they had 5 RFPs in with these massive companies, Bank of America and some other ones. They said that basically if they had gotten, I think, 2 or 3, it would have been so painful for the company. Like it would have put them on their knees as far as what they had to deliver when they had to deliver it. They won all 5.
Wow.
Oh, and,
yeah, ExactTarget was an email service that's now owned by Salesforce, which now owns the biggest building in the city.
Yeah. And Scott McCorkle's point was they didn't know if they could do any of them.
Mm.
They didn't. And he goes, you have to be willing. He said this at an event. He said, you have to be willing to get your nose bloody.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be willing to fail to see what you're truly worth.
And it's so true. Like, the Ray Kroc story, Founder, was a great movie.
Love that movie.
Oh, you partly hate him, but you also love him at the same time.
Yeah, like, exactly.
And I think part of what has, like, I don't have a college degree. I dropped out of college.
Yeah,
I was a history
too.
Major. Yeah, I mean, but I think part of, you know, and then I've had this great, like, I've had every dream job I've ever wanted to have, and I'm 34 years old, and it's just because I never stop grinding. Like, it literally is that insecurity of not having a college degree, and it's not like I know when I know that I'm being annoying, and I know, like, I know social norms, and I know when to, like, when I'm walking past, I'm like, you shouldn't add every person you've ever met onto your Facebook account. But I did.
Yeah.
And so then I ended up with 5,000 friends. You know, I just, like, building a community, it was like, you know what would be a good idea is, how about I set up a Facebook group and start inviting all my libertarian friends into it, get a bunch of people in there. I know I'm annoying my friends,
but
like, you have to do things along the way that you know are going to be somewhat annoying, or maybe
I don't know that we knew they were annoying. You know, I always tell people that given Facebook's age and everything, and Twitter and we're still in the wild west of what social, you know, is going to do to us mentally and behaviorally and everything else online. When people say, I hate it when people are like, there's a guy, I swear to God, he retweets, I think it's almost every day. And it's a tweet that I did like 7 years ago, you know, and it was like, no rules, try things, you know, something like that. And he literally, like, to this day, I go and see who mentioned me, and there it is again, you know? But the thing was like, who makes these rules? I think it's a lot of people that don't want you to succeed
that
put these fake constraints out there that, well, I saw that you wanted to do this. I tell my clients all the time, let's try it. And then we'll find out whether it worked or didn't work.
Yeah. But, like, for me, starting the podcast was, who am I to be a political expert? Well, you've been in politics for 10 years, and you've worked in the Republicans and the Libertarians, and at the Libertarians with a high level, you've worked with hundreds of people. Like, who says you're not an expert? Who says you're not a political commentator?
Your vote is worth the same as anybody else's. So
it's exactly,
so
you know,
who the hell is the right to say, well, I'm going to pay attention to that guy? You know, let's pay attention to the pollsters and the analysts that, you know, that said that Hillary was going to win.
And it's the audacity of like, all right, well, you know, I have experience, and that experience, I think I have a unique point of view, and I want to tell. And then there's the audacity of like just having your friends on.
Yeah.
Like, who says, and you just try stuff, and then you figure out, like, wow, Greg Lenz is like a brilliant political thinker.
Yeah.
You know, like you have a brilliant point of view that is totally unique in somebody like James Neese.
Yeah.
You have a crazy person like Maya Axton that nobody ever listens to, and you see the world in completely different ways as a result of those conversations. Like, I think if you're out there listening, you really just, you just got to try stuff. Like, the insecurity, I still feel it to this day. It doesn't matter how many listeners we have. It doesn't matter if, you know, like, let's say 20 years down the road, I'm hosting a show on CNN. Like, I will still feel like an imposter. I will still feel like somebody at some point is going to figure out that, like, I am not an expert. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just a phony. Like, I think everybody goes through that.
Everybody.
You just got to do it, man. You just got to, like, if you're not even political commentating or podcasting or whatever I've been into, like starting a garage door repair business or becoming the best locksmith in the world. Like, for me, my mentality completely shifted last December when I watched this documentary called Jiro Loves Sushi.
I saw that.
J-I-R-O.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in my fat ass and had pizza like 4 days in a row from Jack's, which is great. Not like the crappy Jack's, but like a local pizza chain, Jack's Pizza down by us.
I've not had it.
Oh, dude. Yeah. They put the toppings under the cheese, and they pile on so many toppings. So good. But I was just laying there like a beached whale in front of my fire watching Hitler documentaries. And I watched, and I just felt like garbage, and I'd fallen off my health path, and I'd like just was, I wasn't achieving what I had had a bad review
at work.
This
sounds like me every Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. Still, I have to have a pep talk on Sunday nights. Trust me, Doug. And I watched this Jiro Loves Sushi documentary. And it's about this old guy in Japan who makes the world's best sushi.
Yeah.
And he's obsessed with it. And he's obsessed with making the world's best sushi. And he's never done achieving the world's perfect sushi. And then I watched this documentary about a guy named C.T. Fletcher, which is called My Magnificent Obsession.
Yes.
C.T. Fletcher is the alpha male inside every man's head. Yes. He's amazing. And he's like, you know what? If I die, he's like, I have a heart condition. And if I die in the gym doing bicep curls and I've died doing my obsession, my life is complete.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like watching those two back to back, it made me go, what am I passionate about? What do I care about? What do I want to wake up and do every day? And what do I want to put into the world? And like right now, what I'm putting into the world is me sitting here doing nothing, me half-assed doing a podcast, half-assed doing a job, half-assed doing personal relationships, half-assed being a member of a family. Like, you just want to be a bum your whole life. And I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, I think other people look at me and go, you're not a bum.
Yeah.
But I'm there's times I'm a bum.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, like, that documentary just inspired me. And so, like,
the only thing I would say to
double
that,
down.
Maybe. I mean, the only thing that I would say to that is that you are poking around and trying a lot of things. Like, I think that the people that frustrate me the most are the ones that they don't want to fail, and so they plan for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And the thing is you don't, it's stupid. You know, I freaking love The Rock, you know.
The
guy's hilarious. But he was he did a video from, you know, standing on a patio in Vancouver, British Columbia, and he was saying that, you know, he played down there for the BC Lions. He played for like Saskatchewan or something. But he was at BC Lions place. He played one game in the CFL and he was cut.
Mm-hmm.
And his dream for the NFL that he worked for his entire life had just gone out the window, which opened up his opportunity to go wrestle, which is what his dad did, and now became, you know, a movie star and everything else.
Yeah.
And so he said something like, you know, sometimes your biggest failure is the very thing you need to succeed, you know, or something like that. And I love that because that's the way I look at it is that's why I tell people try.
Yeah.
Who am I to say no? You know, people come to me and they say, do you think I should do this? And I'm like, try.
Right.
Like, just go. Like, we don't. It's funny, I used to tell Jen, who was my who started her own agency, so I'm forever proud. I don't know whether it was out of, you know, my abuse or my, you know,
sexual or physical or
no, no sexual, you know, but you know, I used to tell Jen all the time to, you know, really be careful of the stories that in your head. Like, we would get on a phone call with a client, you know, and I'd say, you know, we have to up our rates with them, and she'd be like, oh, I don't think they're going to pay that. And I'd say, what, why did you say that? Like, what precipitated that message to flash through your head, you know? And most of the time, and I'm not picking on her, it's us. Like, mm-hmm. most of the time we paint these pictures in our head that are totally false. They're literally a vision that will never happen. Like, the fact is let's say you did quit it all. Tomorrow you start and you crash and burn. Are you going to be on a park bench in a month?
No,
you're going to move on to the next thing. But for some reason, our brains tell us you're going to be on a fucking park bench, you loser.
Right. Yeah. No. And I think, you know? And other people don't see all the stuff that goes on in our head. So, like, yes. they're mystified. I'm mystified sometimes when I meet talented people and they're just like, nobody'd ever take me seriously. I'd never do, you know, yeah. I'm like, you don't see yourself the way that I see you.
Well, but
you know, and you have to like double down and go, oh, maybe I'm doing the same thing.
Let's take a loop all the way back to social media. You know, that I think for one thing that I have done well in the past 10 years is I've really shared my pain with other people. Like I don't think there's a lot of people that follow me online that haven't seen me go through some really big ups and downs, you mm-hmm. know, both weight loss, weight gain, my dad passing away, my business in 2012.
Being on We Are Libertarians.
You know, no, that was awesome. And the thing is it was another one where people were like, oh, you're a marketer. Like, you should always have the, you know, picture of a great steak and a 5-star, you know,
right.
hotel room and where you're traveling to next. And I'm just like, ugh. Like, I want other people to know this has been a struggle, and but it's been worth it. You know, I was just reading a book yesterday or something, but it was basically that entrepreneurs over employees. It was entrepreneurs almost always make less money than employees and are always happier.
Mm.
So like, that's a pretty fascinating thing.
Yeah.
And I tell people when I look back, I had probably, you know, DK's been around for coming up on 11 years now. I had like 2 years that I got paid more than what I got paid, you know, like when I was running at Compendium, you know. The rest of them were way lower,
right.
you know. But I'm happy. And, you know, there are some ups and downs with businesses that, yeah, you got the tax bullshit and everything else, but you know, sometimes you do have $25,000 in the bank that, you know, you can go out and go get something, go on right. vacation, go do whatever. Well, if you're an employee, maybe you got that same $25,000, but you got it spread over, you know, 6 months,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was the difference between us, you know? And so I just think, again, the fake stories that people put in their head and then the fake stories that social media puts in people's heads. You know, we have people, you know, you'll see someone's, you know, there's a terribly sad thing, but a friend of my, my daughter's friend's sister, I don't know exactly what happened. I think it might've been overdosed. I'm not quite sure. But I read her, you know, I'm reading her threads in Facebook, like morbid thing to do, you know, but I was like, do I remember her? You know, was she over at the house, everything else. And I'm reading her threads and it's happy, 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 happy. This person was not a happy person.
Yeah.
Right. But social media became this place of contests where they had to pretend that they were better than they really were. And there's some real danger in that. I think that to go back to our original conversation is social media is a very, very, it's how we want people to perceive us, not the, you know, you never saw the deep, dark things that I yelled at my daughter, you know, in our arguments on, mm-hmm. on Facebook.
Full Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so it's a, it feeds that same weird thing in our head that tells us we're not worthy or we're not this or we're not that. When you're sitting there on Facebook and you're just seeing everybody around you is doing so much better than you are.
Yeah. Well, they're pretending too.
And they're pretending. Mm-hmm. It's all fake, you know?
That's I final question for you and then we'll start wrapping up. But do you see, and I've noticed a huge, huge change in my brain since I got a smartphone in 2010. And this past Saturday or this past Sunday, I put my phone in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because I said, all right, reasonably, I'll be in the bathroom every 2 to 4 hours, 2 to 6 hours. Let me go in there and I'll check it there. I read like half or almost an entire book.
Yeah.
You know, I read over 100 pages.
Yep.
And I it was nice. And this entire week, I've just not been checking social media, having conversations with my phone, like making an active effort to put it down. And it's nice. And the people that I talk to that cut out social media feel better about their life. Like, do you see in the future, in the short-term future, I do, but I'd be interested to hear what you think. Do you see an exodus from smartphones and from social media and from just being hyper-connected? Like, is that honeymoon kind of over with the technology?
I think it's going to be a lot like vacations were with work. You know, at one time in the United States, people didn't go on vacation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they just took some time off to be with their family, replant the garden, you know, and they were back to work on
right.
Monday.
They worked in the city,
yeah.
and they were in a tenant house
yeah.
with
yeah.
three other families,
yeah.
and then they got a train so yeah. they could go to the weekend once a year to see their family for Christmas.
Yeah, and so I think that's what I see it, you know, kind of becoming is that I think more and more people. I'm still the guy that as soon as I wake up in the morning, I turn off my alarms and I check Facebook and I mm-hmm. check Twitter stories to see what Trump said
yeah.
so I can laugh at it.
Right.
You know,
I don't know why he called me shorty.
Yeah,
I'd never call him.
I'm
shorty
that guy, fan. But then I immediately go start reading. I read every morning, mm. you know, and I take the dog out, you know, to do his business. And what's funny is everybody always says to me, man, you are online like 24/7. And it is so not true.
Yeah.
It's that I have 6 podcasts and I have, a couple publications that I'm writing for. And all of those are trickling data into social media.
Yeah.
So it looks like I'm there all day.
And your algorithm is showing Doug hours later. It happens to me all the time,
yeah.
too. I'm like, no, I'm really offline most of the day.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah,
my post is popping up.
Yeah, and so usually for me, it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. I go get in a Facebook fight, you know, and piss everybody off, you know. And then the other thing that I would really recommend people do, and I've been doing this lately, too, is I was doing a hashtag called Good People for a long time. And I don't know if it's still showing up or not, but I was forcing myself. I was actually seeing a hypnotist who's helping me helping me relax and helping me with weight loss. He really helped me too. I lost like 60 pounds with him and then I stopped, of course, and gained it back. But one of the things that he had me do was every single night when I went home, he had me do a gratitude. And it was basically at the end of the day, I had to think about 3 people, past, present, you know, it didn't matter, stranger, you know, whatever that I was appreciative for and why. And it's amazing how that twists your brain.
Yeah.
Like you go from, just got home, there's no food in the house, or, you know, with you, it's the cats meowing, or, you know,
right.
or,
right.
you know, whatever, what the hell's on Netflix? I've watched everything, you know?
why aren't there new Hitler documentaries?
You know, instead I was sitting there going, well, I haven't thought about that teacher in like 20 years. She was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really thankful for her. And all of a sudden I got a little bit more pep in my step, you know, as I was walking around and stuff. And so one of the things that I've been doing even on Facebook is A lot of people, it's really funny. You know how many people have unfollowed you by how many people that haven't seen you talking positively on Facebook?
Oh, no, yeah.
You know, but people are like, oh, yeah, he's in political fights all day. Maybe one every 3 weeks now, you know. But the rest of the time, I really do try to find some really – I'm going through Twitter and going through Facebook, and one of my friends will share something beautiful, and I make it a point to share that.
Yeah.
And I really think that that's what people need to do more. It's easy to get caught up in the hate and the anger, especially if your life isn't going the direction that you thought it would or wanted it to. It's easy to start blaming other people. You know, for me with a business, it was I hated the, you know, IRS and regulation and, you know, Obamacare and this and that.
Right.
The reality was, if I just got my ass out there and did a couple more sales, I'd be fine. Shut up.
You know? It is. You have to take individual responsibility. Yeah. And that's libertarians.
The libertarian way. Yeah.
I mean, libertarians have to live the libertarian lifestyle and be good examples of libertarianism by being individually responsible. And yes, the government is a problem.
Yeah.
But Al Franken groping a woman is not the, you know, Roy Moore is not the end all be all of all your problems.
If you really want to change this country's politics and be an incredible libertarian and really change the direction, go start a business and get wealthy.
Yeah.
And start building power to go do that, right? That's, you're not going to get it as an employee.
I think people have to be really intentional with hitting send too. I think, and I've been thinking a lot about that lately too, where every single tweet, comment, Facebook post is a choice.
Yes.
You know, and
I do a lot of that.
It's a choice.
I write it and then I don't publish it.
I will go back and delete comments and then I'll be in a fight and then somebody will be like, you deleted your comment? I'm like, yeah,
I haven't deleted, but I've hovered over the publish button before where I just go, no, I'm not going to share that.
No, I my flare up, I have my dad's temper and I hit publish and then I think about it for 30 seconds. I'm like, if I were on the other end of that, I would be so mad and that would hurt my feelings. I should undo, like, I'm a professional communicator. I have no business being mean to people online. But like, I think
I love when people sting me though. When I get stung really hard online, I am just like, oh my God, that was amazing.
I'm too sensitive.
Really?
I implode. I get mad.
You must be pissed at me all the time.
Because I know, like, fundamentally, it's like Rob Kendall. Like, Rob Kendall and I go back every single day back and forth.
Yes.
Fundamentally, I love Rob, but Rob's also playing a character, and I love to poke at his character. Yeah. Like, I know deep down Rob's a decent person, but he's catering to old people because he's got to do what he's got to do to get a, you know, get a job. But, like, I'm much too sensitive to be online, and I just, you know, I've had to start, I will go back and delete a comment because I'm like, you know what, that was unnecessary.
Yeah.
And part of my makeup is that the way that I, when I'm not feeling great about myself or I'm feeling personal pain and stress, one of the best stress relievers is just to be an asshole and be mean to somebody. And it's a Spangle family trait. Let me tell you, like, we go back and I'll show you some of my relatives from Southern Indiana.
I think America's, you know, on par.
Yeah. And I think that being mean to a stranger on the internet feels so good sometimes. And it just gets that, it exercises that demon. And I think it's a choice that I've got to look and go, you know what, am I doing this because I feel shitty and I want to make somebody else feel shitty? And if I can make them feel shitty and make them feel lower than me, I'm ranking myself up. But like, at what cost? Like, I'm sacrificing my reputation. I'm sacrificing my mood for an hour or two. I'm sacrificing their mood for an hour or two, a day or two. Like, I'm sacrificing a potential friendship. Like, what's the point of like being mean to somebody?
Well,
and I think
that's the critical question. That's why I've really, really slowed down on the politics online is am I making people think differently?
Yeah.
And if I write it out and I'm about to publish it and I sit there and I ask that question, like, after I publish this, will anybody think differently?
Yeah.
90% of the time it's no. Yeah. You know, 10% of the time it's, it's, you know, I shared a story the other day, you know, the I didn't realize that the Congress had a shush fund for sexual harassment.
Yeah.
Like $15 million.
$15 million. You know, to keep people, yeah.
You know, so I put out, you know, I said, if you think government is serious about sexual harassment, read this, you know, and the people that responded were both sides of the aisle, everything, you know, and nobody said anything shitty. You know, everybody was just kind of shocked because they had, you know, they right. had never read that before. And so that's like one that I said, okay, I'm going to be snarky, but people should really know that this exists. And a lot of people in my feed had no clue, you know? Yeah. And so that changed people's, you know, perspectives a little bit. But most of the time I look at it and I go, I have a couple of trolls. I have Joe Shoemaker, you know, he's like wicked troll on me. Mm-hmm. And he can be, he can be just mean.
I've got those people too, like John Ulrich. Like, I know fundamentally John's a good guy, yeah. but every time I see John pop up in my notifications, like, yeah. is this going to be the time I block this asshole? You know, like, I've met him and we get along in person, but like, on, like Dorn Brenton.
Yeah, Joe's like a really nice guy. He's a yeah. good realtor, everything else. But he will go from 0 to 100% slicing my throat with yep. with a comment in no time. And now I have fun the opposite way. Like, I disarm, you know, he throws that out and I instantly throw a disarm out. Like, yeah. Joe, come on.
Like,
you know?
Rob Kendall and I do that. Yeah. And like, we didn't talk for like a period of 3 or 4 months because he just pissed me off too bad one day. And like, and I had to go, like, Rob's not really being, you know,
that's
like,
it.
It was a rough period of my time, my life. But yeah, like, if it happens during campaigns too.
Yeah.
Like, I always feel so bad when I hear people say, like, yeah, my aunt and I aren't speaking anymore, or because it's not like it is serious. Like,
well, libertarians politics, really do have a lot of morning time during campaigns.
We have a lot of like we lose a lot, but. Like,
sorry, I didn't mean to sting you.
All right, final thoughts. I gotta get out of here. I gotta go. Yeah, no, it is. It's just sad. Like, you don't have to take it all so seriously. It's serious business, but you don't have to take it so seriously.
I always tell people what's in your life that you can change, right? And it's, you know, Trump, Obama, whoever is in Washington isn't really impacting my life that much.
Yeah,
it's just not, you know, that's the thing is, do I want government to retreat and do I want more of a libertarian approach and constitutional approach? Absolutely. Because I do think about my kids and their grandkids and everything else. But today I can choose to be happy. I can choose to ignore people online that are shitty. I can go read a nice book or watch a positive story. Right. I can sit out in my backyard and think about three people I really appreciated, and I can go to bed in a happy mood.
Yeah, like, I think it's because
I can choose. Yeah, that's my choice.
But know? I think it's also because your identity isn't wrapped up into your politics, and I think I certainly have had this. Like, when I left the Libertarian Party of Indiana, I had spent 4 years being the libertarian in the state. Like, my whole identity was Libertarian Party of Indiana. Like,
that can burn you out.
My job, my politics, my marriage was on the rocks. So, like, I wasn't happy about, you know, I didn't have a good family life. Like, my identity was libertarian.
Yeah.
And so when people attacked the Libertarian Party of Indiana, it was very personal.
Yeah.
And now when people attack libertarianism or the Libertarian Party or the, you know, Republican politicians like Rand Paul that I like, I just don't take it as seriously because, you know, my identity has expanded. I'm a Christian. I'm a libertarian. I'm an uncle. I'm a son. I'm an employee at a place that I love to work. Like, I'm a friend to all these different people. It's like, you can have friends and family and people move in and out of your life and your life isn't destroyed. Like, I can go through a breakup now and it's because my identity isn't, my tied. Worth and identity isn't all wrapped up in that thing. And I think there's too many people in online talking politics where their identity is too closely identified with like where they feel like it's a personal attack. Like, if I don't like Donald Trump, it doesn't mean that I don't like you.
Well, that's, I always, with me, it's really funny because, you know, I would have much rather had an incredible candidate to vote for in the last election, you know, but I always joke with people, like, the funny thing is people on the left always instantly, you know, say, well, you Republicans, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not a Republican, so right. I agree with you,
yeah.
You know, and the people on the right are always like, you liberal bastard, right. You know, and I'm like, yeah, well, I'm not, but okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm always like, we paint this picture in our head of that is the demon child spawned from hell,
right.
That I have to lash out at, and it's my job to slay the dragon. Yeah. You know, no, it's not. Chill out. Let him go.
All right. Final thoughts. Final thoughts for all of this conversation, and then also how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, the big thing is I do think look out for something to happen down the, you know, the Facebook monopoly kind of line. YouTube, Facebook, Reddit, you know, whatever. They're playing a really, really dangerous game right now.
Right.
And when the audience leaves, that's when the money leaves, right? And that's when these things collapse overnight. And I just wouldn't be surprised. It might not be for a year, it might not be for 5 years. But these guys are getting such huge monolithic companies that are single-minded that it's destined for failure.
Yeah.
It's destined. And somebody else will pop up that's more agile, that has better technology, that we'll have more fun with online, and just make the plunge when that happens. That's why I love adopting new, you know, I don't care. Like, was it Gab out now and mm-hmm. doing stuff is like a, you know.
Well, like Twitch is owned by Amazon. Yeah. So Amazon has the server space to handle right. a competitor play. For it's primarily gaming, but if they were to make a consumer move,
oh, they are. They're it's coming.
Yeah,
they're going to make a huge move, and again, go support those.
Right.
If you think Facebook and Google and Twitter are being assholes, look, go move over. It'll be good to have competition because guess what? Once there's competition and they have to battle over the dollar, they'll quit messing with us.
Yeah.
They'll quit messing with everybody, and it'll be a free place. You know.
All right, Doug, thanks for joining me. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, man.
All right, cool.
Cool deal.